This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
In that cause, this concert will be held on July 10th at 7:30 p.m. in the Quaker Meeting House located at 1318 West 26th Street, Houston, Texas 77008. For more information, visit friendshouston.org or call 832-466-1342. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And on this evening's program, we have a discussion coming up of gay pride with Ray Hill.
Who's the king of gay pride, right?
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
He started
pride.
His eminence.
And then in the second hour, we have J.D.'s Queer Music Heritage and its songs that he's been meaning to play.
So it's a really, really gay show tonight.
Isn't it always?
But tonight's
especially so. Yes, yeah. It's especially so. Well, and, you know, let's look at it. 40 years ago today was the burning of the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland. It just set on fire.
Ah!
I remember that.
Yes. Well, and then this year, of course, was also Woodstock. It was also the landing on the moon, and it's the 40th anniversary of Stonewall.
That was a crazy year, it sounds like.
Yes.
I,
those of us who can remember it.
I only read about
so
it in history books.
I was so young then.
You were still a boy then.
Well, that's true.
Yes.
So, and then, you know, so we're going to talk about that. It's the 31st year of Pride here in Houston.
Woo!
So we're going to do a little bit of reflection and talk about it. And Ray's going to join us to sort of give us some perspective. And I will add a few words here and there.
We'll see if you get any words in.
We'll comment about, you know, where Pride has come and where it's going, and the difference of how it's going, you know. And then there are many, many events that have been built around
Pride. Do we still need Pride? I guess we could talk about that.
Well, we can talk about that. So
well,
that's coming
a
up.
A number of milestones, too, with the first nighttime Pride.
And a very important Supreme Court decision today that they are keeping the Voters' Rights Act, which has been very important here to Houston, because before that, all city council members were elected at large, which made it almost impossible for any minorities to get elected. It also had to deal with a lot of other issues in districting state reps and congressional districts and stuff like that. So luckily, at least for now, that's still being held up.
Good.
And we also have, of course, This Way Out. We have News Wrap from This Way Out, and then we have the feature segment. And, of course, both of those pieces are going to be talking about the action that the president took this week to provide partner benefits for same-gender partners.
Very limited.
Yes.
I think that's what we call a bone that was thrown.
Yeah,
there.
Well, a little news. Barney Frank will introduce an inclusive ENDA on Wednesday to the House of Representatives.
An inclusive ENDA?
That means
it's
that
have
includes the T's.
Oh, okay.
Not just
yes.
GLB.
Okay.
So does that mean HRC will oppose it?
No.
Oh.
Actually, no. In this case, everybody seems to be on board together,
good.
I think.
Good.
Yes. We have a united community, what?
Well, probably so.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it's something that we are all unified on, and that is employment non-discrimination that includes everyone.
Yeah.
Which is vitally important for all of us.
Absolutely.
Well, let's play a piece of music.
Okay, I have something here. It's actually called Something There Is. This is by Dave Hall, and it was recorded live at the Houston Pride Festival in 2001.
Oh, okay.
Your orders, and I know you got to watch your border. Yes, I know how I know.
for I have been there too, and I've lived to tell. Yes, I know how I know, for I have built a wall and mended it well. They're marching one by one under a blazing sun, each with a smoking gun shining against the sky. They're marching two by two, marching on me and you.
Live Oak Friends Meeting invites you to spend an evening with singer-songwriter Hank Wojcie. That little Quaker meeting place up in the Heights will be hosting this special evening to benefit the Quaker Peace Festival to be held this fall. The Muses Muse states that Hank Wojcie is a Texas-based songwriter who handles protests and social observations in the style of Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, Bruce Springsteen, and John Prine, and that he is a worthy voice in that cause. This concert will be held on July 10th at 7:30 p.m. in the Quaker Meeting House located at 1318 West 26th Street, Houston, Texas 77008. For more information, visit friendshouston.org or call 832-466-1342. This is KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer and A.
Brian Levinka.
And we have a very special guest with us tonight, the famous, my favorite person, Ray
Community
Hill.
Pillar himself.
Yes.
Oh, mercy.
The pillar of, well, the pillar of my community anyway. I don't know what y'all think out there, but he is to me. And we're going to talk about Pride. It's a special anniversary.
This is the Gay High Holy Week.
Gay High Holy Week.
It's the 40th anniversary.
40 years.
Yes, absolutely. And I know I wasn't there, but you knew a lot of people that were there, didn't you? Know?
Well, I was active before Stonewall.
We kind of think of that as the beginning, but
there was stuff going on before that. I began writing and organizing in 1966, which is 3 years before Stonewall, and then by 1968, I was invited. You had to be invited to the North American Conference of Homophile Organizations, or NACO, Nacho, actually. We would recognize the name from commercial roots now, Nachos, and which is a strange organization. That was the equivalent of what we now refer to as Human Rights Campaign and Gay, Lesbian, Transgendered National Task Force combined. And there were 18 people there.
18 people?
18 registered guests. We had two people drop by that did not register. One was the famous Harry Hay, who was just returning from East Europe. He had been invited to East Germany for the decriminalization of homosexual behavior under their laws.
Now, at that time, it was sort of dangerous, the 18 of y'all together,
to
wasn't
me.
It?
Well, we were meeting in a restaurant that had been closed. The Trip restaurant in Chicago had been closed because the police came in and found two men holding hands.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And so the restaurant, since it was closed, was a nice meeting place. It wouldn't cost us any money. So we met there. Of the 18 people there, three were undercover police officers of various kinds from the federal government and from the state of Illinois. And I didn't keep up with them.
You mean J. Edgar Hoover's boys?
One of J. Edgar Hoover's boys.
Air quotes for
air
boys.
Air quotes for that. One of J. Edgar Hoover's boys and then somebody from the Illinois police also attended. And I don't know who the other third one was from, but he was a undercover police officer.
What were they expecting?
I don't know. I mean, you know,
they probably were disappointed.
Nefarious and
they did
undercover activities.
They did not join in the discussion. And they were different, and they didn't have credentials like the rest of us came with. We had to be invited to get there, and somehow they got invitations without having a background that we could trace. Of those 18 people, six people are still alive, including all three delegates from Texas.
Now, should we kind of explain what Stonewall is for some of our listeners who may not know? I mean, we always say Stonewall, but
happened in 1969, New York was suffering an incredible heat wave. They do that from time to time. Mm-hmm. And that was the day Judy Garland's body was brought back from France. She had died in France, and they brought her body back on a ship. She would ultimately have a very high, glamorous funeral somewhere in California, in Hollywood, but her body was on the docks. And so every drag queen worth her salt in New York put on her best heels and most uncomfortable walking shoes and best outfit and went down to greet the coffin. And they walked a great distance because it was not the doctor, not necessarily in the bus lines. And so then they walked a great distance. They got back to the Stonewall Inn, which was an unlicensed liquor bar on Christopher Street.
Yeah. Run by the Mafia.
Run by the Mafia at Washington Square. And so they came in, and they were just settled down and beginning to get their first cool drinks when here come the cops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the classic up-against-the-wall mother kind of raid. Well, of course, the cops came in the front door, and the queens went out the back door, and as many of them as could, and one of them turned around and propped a board up against the back door. And so the cops couldn't chase them down the alleys, was the routine.
Okay.
And they're leaving some queens in the bar.
Oh, no.
And but they didn't go away. They went around through the alleys, because queens know how alleys work.
Which was rather unusual for the time.
It was impossible. Nobody had ever heard of anything like that before.
And somebody who's really interested in knowing the full story of this, David Carter, mm-hmm. did a wonderful book called Stonewall. We've mm-hmm. had him on the show before.
Sure.
And it's just incredible of all the things that happened. I mean, there was a story about, back then, police radios were like these...
Sure.
Like Mike Stubblefield used to carry around.
Suitcases,
yeah. They were like suitcases, so not everybody had one. It didn't work, or they got false information on it. They never knew how some of this stuff happened. There happened to be a Village Voice reporter across the street working in their auxiliary mm-hmm. office. It just happened to be across the street from Stonewall, and they're seeing this
with a Smith Corona.
Yeah, watching this stuff happen. And he went down there to cover it. And the other interesting thing is, David, Carter found a lot of people who were still alive to be able
sure.
to tell the story. And,
of course, you know that the last time we had a reunion, Stonewall 25 was marching in New York. We had a reunion of Stonewall veterans. Now, total participation in Stonewall was about 200 people. 2,500 showed up.
Yeah, it's like Woodstock.
Some people
yeah.
who hadn't even been born when yeah. the Stonewall Rebellion happened. But
the other thing that's probably really important is that these people who were involved in this were not the suit-wearing executive types of people who supposedly knew how to navigate the bureaucracy and create change.
Well, I was at the North American Conference of Homophile Organizations headquarters in Kansas City. We had placed our headquarters in the middle of the country because it was equidistant from East Coast and West Coast, which are the power broke, and we were trying to develop organizing and efforts in the middle of the country. So Kansas City was the headquarters. The actual executive director and president for the next conference did not go by his real name.
Which was not unusual.
Not unusual in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Did not go by his real name. I did, and David Patterson did. And David and I, David's still alive. I had dinner with him in Austin recently. David and I went to Kansas City to check into the national headquarters and look over reorganizing what we were calling the exchange, which is everybody's newsletters would come there and then get distributed from there to save postage. And so we went there to help do that. And the phone rang, and Mark, whatever his name, real name was busy talking to somebody. And so I answered the phone, and it was Dick Leisch mm-hmm. of New York. And Dick Leisch, who had a lot of stress in his voice, said, "You won't believe this." And I said, "Try me." And he said, "Well, the drag queens and the street punk hustlers and the dykes in pants have started a riot in New York." And I said, "You're right. I don't believe that." And he said, and the company was explaining what's going on. This was the second day.
Yeah, that's the other thing that not everybody knows, that this didn't just happen one day.
It happened three days.
Yeah.
And the second day, Dick Leisch started calling around, letting the rest of us know what was going on, because there was that Village Voice story, but the Village Voice at the time was a weekly. So it wasn't going to come out until Friday.
I want to go back because we started, we've gone several different directions, but the Queens were in the alley.
Yeah.
And they were coming. They
didn't go away. They came around in front. They blocked the police from leaving. And somebody, one of the veterans of it, said somebody had a rose and they threw the rose, and then somebody said, no, let's give them tips. And they started throwing pennies and they ran out of pennies real quick because these are people that are living on housing subsidy.
Right.
Well, these people are living in New York in the 1960s the way I live in Houston now, well below the poverty line.
And one of the other things that happened back then, and they did this in the Harvey Milk film, and the caucus used to do this many years ago, was the phone tree.
Yes. Well, they didn't, Jack, they really didn't have a phone tree. They had social connections. And so the word got out around the bars, and then people started calling people locally. But by the time Harvey Milk got around, that's 10 years.
Nine years later. Right.
By then, and really, who kicked off the phone tree? Well, we had one here.
Yes.
Every community had a phone tree alert system.
It was sort of like a pyramid thing.
Was, yeah.
You called one person, they called a couple people, they called a couple people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But you, I mean, and who was the wizard of all this was Fred Pies. Fred Pies could sit on the telephone, he could talk to 30 people in half hour.
Wow.
Just bam, 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 right after another. and so then, but crowds began to gather, and there was about 200 people there. There weren't 200 people in the bar. But there were 200 people outside the bar blocking the police from getting out. And then somebody threw something heavy enough to break the window.
Possibly a parking meter.
I had heard the parking meter was there, or a cobblestone. That somebody broke the window, and then they poured in gasoline and set fire to it.
I didn't know that.
And this place was very dangerous in the first place.
Sure.
It didn't have very good fire exits. And
They had a back door and a front door, and the back door was being blocked by a 4x4 leaned up against the door. So the cops couldn't get out that way. And then the fire trucks had a hard time getting there because they started throwing things at the fire trucks when it got out. So it really was a rebellion with the potential. Two of the officers were treated for burns.
Mm-hmm.
More than that, the gay people were treated, and one of the queens jumped out of a second floor at the emergency wing and impaled herself on one of those iron fences with spikes.
Oh, Jesus.
And a crowd gathered for that, and then they had to bring in a welder to cut her out of that. And it was a mess. The whole thing was a mess. And so Mayor Lindsay decided to withdraw the police force the second day. So he said if they're not police there, there won't be a fight there. So he withdrew the police forces, and I asked Dick Leisch what he was. I said, are you in communication with the mayor? And he said he was, and the mayor has withdrawn the police. I said, well, what are you telling me? I'm telling him to go back in there and use whatever force necessary to restore order. And I thought about that, and I said, Dick, sometimes you can bet on the wrong horse. Be careful.
Mm-hmm.
We don't hear much from Dick Leisch anymore. We didn't hear much from Dick Leisch over the years. Somehow or other, I managed to survive because I would have given some thought to jeopardizing the lives of gay people by asking the police to use whatever force is necessary.
So it went over 3 days. What was going on that second day when Lindsay pulled the police back?
Well, what was going on is that was a celebration. Cops are gone. And so I had a street party. That's where you get all those pictures of all those happy pictures of all the people. And there's several of those floating around gathered up in front. I've got one of the, mine's probably a third generation copy, but that's pretty close to the original of a Stonewall Rebellion picture of the drag queens out in front holding one another. And there's the burnt out place behind them.
Well, we're very proud of that.
Okay. Right, absolutely, absolutely. But the thing about it is, why do we celebrate the anniversary of that?
Well, I think there's one also important thing is that this could have happened and nobody could have really known. What happened was they organized a year later a celebration in New York and a couple other cities.
Yeah,
and that sort of And you and I went to
Los Angeles.
First,
Los Angeles, New York, Christopher Street West, and New York Gay Pride.
Gay Liberation.
Yeah, right. And actually, there's a movie of that. A very natural thing, which has one of my ex-boyfriends, Bo White, in it. Bo's the second lover of Cuban, of course.
Very natural.
Very natural thing. And it's now out in CD, and you can get it at the Hollywood or at Audio Video Plus.
Is that about Stonewall, or what is it?
No, it's a love story, but they have shots from the first celebration of Stonewall. And you can hear Morris Kite's voice in the background.
Well, the amazing thing was, like I said, is that the next year there was a couple celebrations around the country, and then it grew from there. And at the present day, there are celebrations around the world, not all in June, but all commemorating. And some
Dallas
of them,
does theirs in September, for instance.
Yes, and some of them, when they started doing their own celebration, they sort of had their own version of Stonewall, such as Sydney, Australia, in that the powers to be wouldn't let them have this march or parade or picnic. And then they sort
of... did it anyway.
Yeah, they did it anyway, and it was sort of their version.
The thing about it is Stonewall's 40 years, my anniversary. My coming out actually was in 1959. So this is 50 years for me.
Wow. I got what interesting from what I'm hearing of the story is that the fact that Lindsay pulled the police back instead of pushing on to restore, quote-unquote, restore...
Lindsay was a remarkable mayor in any case.
Well, he was... best as I can remember, he seemed to be an all-right mayor. What's interesting is that him pulling the police back actually was the celebration that we had won.
Yeah, that was celebrated that way in the hood. In the hood. But you know, let me tell you something. Here's the problem. When I started thinking about this in 1959 when I came out of the closet and nobody else was out of the closet. Well, there are people that there are no closets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can tell.
Right. There are no doors in the closet.
Right. And to me, in the early days, that's a very valuable asset, because you can count on those people showing up if you're going to have a public event. Now, you go. Actually, remember our first demonstrations, I would make house calls for about a week, have dinner with somebody and lunch with somebody at their house, and convince them to come to the event and bring people with them. We had our first march down Main Street in 1976.
So it was 9 years after Stonewall, I guess, because it's 31 years. Why did it take so long for Houston to?
Well, we just didn't get in the vine. Actually, started celebrating in Dallas a couple of years ahead of that.
Yeah.
Well, look at Juneteenth. Took a while for.
Well, I mean, right. I mean, why did it happen 31 years ago in Houston? What was the
event? I got out of prison.
And
literally. I got out of prison, and the first thing I tried to go to Integrity Houston, which is not the Episcopal organization, but Integrity Houston, which is the social group that is kind of the, they claim to be the godfather of the caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to go there, and they threatened to have me arrested because I was an ex-convict, and they didn't want me in the building. And so I said, okay. And so what I did is I called a news conference for Pride Week in 1975. And I sent Integrity a formal note that I was holding a news conference. They said, oh my God, this guy is fixing to take over the public image of our community. So they cast lots, and through Jerry Miller lost, and he had to come representing that, and Pokey Anderson came.
It was
Bob Falls, Pokey Anderson, Jerry Miller, and myself. And that was the first public visibility of the gay community.
And that went down Main Street?
No. The march the following year went down Main Street. Mm-hmm. The news conference went down. The nice thing about the news conference, everybody showed up except the Chronicle. And so when I got home, the Chronicle called and said, would y'all come by the Chronicle? We've got to play catch up. We missed your story, but we want to cover it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how about that?
So the picture in the Chronicle is in my personal archives.
How about that?
Okay, and so a few years later, Anita Bryant came.
In 77, which was the biggest change, Anita Bryant came to Houston. And the effect of Anita Bryant, it's actually in Milk. If you watch the documentary Milk, Milk keeps saying, we need to bring Anita here. Mm-hmm. And that was pursuant to a conversation that I had with Harvey Milk about the phenomenal effect of Anita's coming to Houston, how we were able to organize around that.
Oh, yeah. I was still in the closet, but I came out of the closet enough to sure. help out with that.
Well,
I was so angry.
Let's wrap up here. And first of all, there's an event tomorrow.
An event tomorrow. The Democratic Party is having their Gay Pride Week event tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at the Democratic Party headquarters, 14-something West
North
Loop.
North Loop West.
North Loop West. It's there between T.C. Jester and Shepherd.
Right. It's if you're heading west, it's before the Home Depot.
It's the old Labor building up there.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then the parade is, the festival starts at 11 a.m. this Saturday mm-hmm. at Yoakum and Westheimer. And yep. the parade mm-hmm. starts at 8:45 p.m.
Sharp.
Okay. And another thing is that in the, high atop the Shell building at the Plaza Club, the Lambda Legal is having their annual Lawrence Victory Breakfast, and that'll happen Friday morning.
Ray, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Today I'm proud to issue a presidential memorandum that paves the way for long overdue progress in our nation's pursuit of equality.
The debate on this has changed so dramatically. I mean, gay people in Iowa are being married, not in Massachusetts, but in Iowa. And the president has been talking about, you know, hospital visitation rights. It is reactive. It is very behind the curve.
You know, when you lack basic equality and basic civil rights, we ought to be impatient. That's a mandate if you're an activist.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Obama's DOMA drama yields many benefits. Violent attacks follow Sao Paulo's mammoth pride parade and previewing the art of fluid sexuality. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm John Torres.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 20th, 2009. U.S. President Barack Obama issued a memorandum this week ordering government agencies to extend a few benefits to the partners of gay and lesbian federal employees. They include sick leave and long-term care insurance, but not the biggest employee benefit, health care. In his first LGBT-related action and comments since taking office, Obama said during the signing ceremony on June 17th that the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, prevented him from authorizing all of the same benefits given to heterosexual government workers. He also called for repeal of that Clinton-era measure. It was probably no coincidence that the president's move followed a firestorm of criticism from LGBT rights advocates the previous week over a Department of Justice brief supporting DOMA in a court challenge to the law. While it is not unusual for the Justice Department to routinely defend existing laws, it was offensive language in the brief, comparing same-gender relationships to incest and pedophilia, which sparked the torrent of outrage. Several notable rights leaders have threatened to boycott a $1,000-a-plate LGBT fundraiser later this month for the Democratic National Committee, with Vice President Joe Biden as the keynote speaker. We'll have a lot more on this story later in the program.
Sao Paulo, Brazil has hosted, by most accounts in recent years, the world's largest LGBT pride parade. The city welcomed as many as 3 million visitors at this year's 13th annual celebration on June 14th. But 21 people were injured by a bomb thrown into a crowd of people at about 9 p.m. that evening in a popular downtown gay nightclub area. 4 people were rushed to the hospital. One has critical head trauma, another is in serious condition with multiple injuries, and the 2 others are said to have non-life-threatening injuries. 17 people were treated at the scene by paramedics for minor shrapnel injuries. Initial reports said a resident, angry about the noise that night, threw the explosive into the street from a window. But parade spokesman Pedro Javier told the Associated Press that it was probably a planned anti-gay attack because, he said, nobody has a bomb just sitting around at home. The carnival-like parade spanned nearly 8 hours earlier in the day. It drew the diverse range of LGBT people and even heterosexual couples, many accompanied by their children, for a mammoth march down skyscraper-lined Avenida Paulista to the beat of loud music blasting from some 20 sound trucks. Ironically, São Paulo Mayor Gilberto Kassab said at a kickoff rally that this parade is an opportunity to express a repudiation of homophobia. According to other press reports, the bombing was not the only homophobic act during the parade celebration. Police said a 17-year-old boy who took part in the parade remains in a coma at a São Paulo hospital after being attacked by a group of unknown assailants who found him alone on an empty street. Another youth was attacked in Roosevelt Plaza, where the march ended, and a third was stabbed in Largo do Arroche Plaza.
But there were no reported problems as tens of thousands marched through the streets of Rome on the same day in that city's annual Pride Parade. Colorfully dressed demonstrators carrying rainbow flags attacked the conservative government of Premier Silvio Berlusconi with signs reading, "Freedom for All." Several banners demanded rights for same-gender couples and marriage equality. Other marchers dressed in clerical garb with colorful hats and carried signs reading No Vatican to protest what they say is the church's excessive influence on Italian politics.
In heavily Roman Catholic Poland, hundreds of gay and lesbian activists paraded through the streets of Warsaw on June 13th and also called for legal recognition of same-gender couples. About 1,500 demonstrators marched along Warsaw's main Marszałkowska Street under police escort. Several dozen right-wing youth shouting anti-gay slurs confronted the parade near the Parliament building, but police prevented direct confrontations between the two groups.
In Croatia, another mostly Roman Catholic country, police also guarded some 900 activists as they marched through the center of Zagreb in the city's 8th Pride Parade. As in previous years, activists from Serbia, Bosnia, Albania, and Slovenia were among the event's participants. About 50 members of a minor political party and a neo-Nazi group held a counter-demonstration and shouted anti-gay slogans. Police were able to maintain order and arrested 5 of the demonstrators. They also reported that a 27-year-old man who took part in the parade was seriously injured that night in an assault by 3 unknown assailants.
An estimated 400,000 people capped a weekend festival with the 39th annual Pride Parade in West Hollywood, California on June 14th. Both L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom, speaking at the kickoff rally, helped set the tone for a more political event than usual by calling for action at the ballot box to overturn Proposition 8. Last year, of course, Pride participants celebrated the state Supreme Court's marriage equality ruling, which would be overturned when voters passed that ballot measure in November. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger said in a court filing this week that he would not be defending the marriage equality ban in a federal lawsuit challenging its constitutionality, saying it's up to the judicial system to determine its legality. Attorney General Jerry Brown said last week that he'd be filing a friend of the court brief supporting the challenge to Prop 8.
The annual Pride Parade in Des Moines, Iowa, on June 14th, was reportedly the largest turnout in its 30-year history as participants celebrated that state Supreme Court's marriage equality ruling earlier this year. Organizers with Capital City Pride said they expected more than 10,000 celebrants by the end of a 4-day festival leading up to the parade.
But Lithuania's parliament approved a measure this week that outlaws any discussion of homosexuality in schools and in public information to which children are exposed. The bill was overwhelmingly approved on its first reading on June 4th and again on this week's final reading, but almost half of the MPs in the 141-seat legislature missed each vote. Amnesty International said the Law on the Protection of Minors Against the Detrimental Effect of Public Information compares positive discussion of gays and lesbians with the display of a dead or cruelly mutilated body of a person, and information that arouses fear or horror or encourages self-mutilation or suicide. Nicola Duckworth, Amnesty's Europe and Central Asia Program Director, said the law denies the right to freedom of expression and deprives students access to the support and protection they may need. Opponents plan to challenge the law in the European Court of Human Rights.
67 gay Filipino men working in Saudi Arabia were arrested by police in Riyadh on June 13th for holding a drag show and possessing liquor at a party in celebration of Philippine Independence Day. Each faces 3 to 6 months behind bars and 50 to 100 lashes on charges of imitating women, an offense against the Quran. Vice Counsel Rusel Reyes corrected earlier reports that 72 Filipinos had been arrested, saying the correct number of 67 was based on an actual count of detainees in the police station when representatives of the Philippine Embassy visited them. Many were still wearing gowns and wigs. It was not the first time that Filipino workers have been arrested in Saudi Arabia for violating the Islamic country's strict laws against homosexuality and cross-dressing. The men were released on June 16th after their respective sponsors paid the necessary fees. Court hearings of the charges against them are pending.
The British Foreign and Commonwealth Office released a statement this week strongly condemning the reported mass killings of gay men in Iraq. The U.S. State Department raised the issue with Iraqi government officials in Baghdad last week. Several human rights groups have reported that dozens of men who were gay or perceived to be gay have been murdered during the past several months by armed militias, apparently acting on comments by religious leaders that homosexuality must be eradicated in the country. Others have been victims of so-called honor killings by homophobic family members. Some LGBT Iraqi expatriates say that the government has been complicit in the upsurge of violence against gay men in the U.S.-occupied country.
But finally, openly gay Scottish actor and rights activist Alan Cumming has received an OBE, Officer of the Order of the British Empire, in the annual Queen's Birthday Honours List. Cumming, who now lives in New York City, used the occasion to criticize the inaction of the U.S. government on LGBT equality. Writing on his blog, he said he was proud to be cited for his activism as much as for his work as an entertainer, and that it's something I am very passionate about. I see this honor as encouragement to go on fighting for what I believe is right, and for what I take for granted as a UK citizen. It makes me very proud to be British and galvanized as an American.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 20th, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm John Torres.
We'll have an entertaining conversation with the quadri-talented artist behind a new movie with a bisexual bent later in the program. U.S. President Barack Obama this week issued a memorandum granting limited benefits to the partners of gay and lesbian federal employees. The June 17th signing ceremony prompted some all-news networks to break away from regular programming to cover the president's remarks.
Today I'm proud to issue a presidential memorandum that paves the way for long overdue progress in our nation's pursuit of equality. Many of our government's hardworking and dedicated and patriotic public servants have long been denied basic rights that their colleagues enjoy for one simple reason. The people that they love are of the same sex. In consultation with Secretary of State Clinton, as well as OPM Director John Berry, my administration has completed a long and thorough review to identify a number of areas where we can extend federal benefits to the same-sex partners of foreign service and executive branch government employees. Now, under current law, we cannot provide same-sex couples with the full range of benefits enjoyed by heterosexual married couples. That's why I'm proud to announce my support for the Domestic Partners Benefits and Obligations Act, crucial legislation that will guarantee these rights for all federal employees. Among the steps we have not yet taken is to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act. I believe it's discriminatory. I think it interferes with states' rights, and we will work with Congress to overturn it. We've got more work to do to ensure that government treats all its citizens equally, to fight injustice and intolerance in all its forms, and to bring about that more perfect union. I'm committed to these efforts, and I pledge to work tirelessly on behalf of these issues in the months and years to come.
Of course, it could have been a coincidence that the president's action followed an uproar from equality advocates late last week. A Justice Department brief supporting the Defense of Marriage Act against a federal legal challenge drew heated demands for Obama to make good on his campaign promises to advocate for LGBT rights. While most accepted the explanation that it was routine for the Department of Justice brief to defend existing federal law, there was widespread outrage over its language. For example, it compared loving same-gender relationships with incest and pedophilia. Several national LGBT organizations had already voiced their dissatisfaction with the Obama administration for its failure to advance queer causes, so the DOMA brief was the last straw. Was Obama's memorandum too little too late? Free Speech Radio news reporter Karen Miller gathered some reaction that night.
Gay rights activist Rick Rosendahl has worked with the U.S. Department of Labor for 30 years. As a federal employee, he says benefits are definitely lacking.
Health benefits for partners of a gay federal employee, for the same-sex partner. And then there are survivor benefits, relocation assistance in cases where a federal employee is relocated.
But Rosendahl, who also works with the Gay and Lesbian Activists Alliance in Washington, D.C., says today's announcement by the president is a step.
The president deserves due credit for what he does extend to us today, and then we continue pressing for more.
That more is holding President Obama to what he promised on the campaign trail.
When I am president of the United States, gays and lesbians will have somebody who will fight for equal rights for them. Somebody who opposes don't ask, don't tell. Somebody who's fought to make sure that gays and lesbians aren't discriminated against on the job or hospital visitation, because they are our brothers and they are our sisters. And I don't mind everybody knowing where I stand, because that is why I'm in it.
But since the start of his presidency, some have wondered if he will keep his promises. Recently, the Justice Department released a memo defending the Defense of Marriage Act. The act defines marriage as a legal union between one man and one woman with regards to federal law. It also protects the rights of states to decide on the legal recognition of same-sex unions. Carissa Cunningham, Director of Public Affairs with the advocacy group GLAAD, says Obama needs to make a move.
It's an odious discriminatory law, which is responsible for the lack of benefits that federal employees have. The large-scale thing that he and not to let them off the hook, members of Congress could do, is introduce repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act.
Kevin Cathcart is the executive director of the civil rights advocacy group Lambda Legal. He says President Obama also needs to explain why it's taking so long to act on the military's don't ask, don't tell policy.
He's not a candidate now. He's the president now, and he's the commander in chief now, and he ought not to be allowing a policy that he disagrees with to continue wrecking the lives of people who are serving in our military, sapping the strength of the military. It needs to end.
Many anti-gay groups have predictably condemned Obama's announcement extending some federal benefits to same-sex partners. The Conservative Family Research Council, in a statement, questioned if President Obama has the authority to make these changes. Karen Miller, FSRN, Washington.
Corporate news coverage of the memorandum explored the overall relationship between the president and his LGBT constituents. Richard Socarides, an advisor to President Bill Clinton on gay issues, talked with CNN's Anderson Cooper.
Richard, do you think the president has betrayed gay and lesbian Americans based on his campaign promises?
Well, I think he deserves some credit for what he did today. I mean, I think it was a positive. It was long overdue. And I think his basic problem is that he overpromised during the campaign, and now he's really underdelivered.
Why do you think he's underdelivering?
I think that they are too focused on not repeating the mistakes of the Clinton era. They sort of learned too well what those mistakes were. They have multifaceted excuses. They've got a lot going on. They've been saving the banking system, trying to end two wars, but they're playing this out in an old political era. And the debate on this has changed so dramatically. I mean, gay people in Iowa are being married, not in Massachusetts, but in Iowa. And the president has been talking about, hospital visitation rights. It is reactive. It is very behind the curve.
Wisconsin Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin joined other lawmakers at the signing ceremony, which also included pioneering gay rights activist Frank Kameny. Kameny famously sued the U.S. government some 50 years ago after he was fired from his federal job simply for being gay. There's a major $1,000-a-plate LGBT fundraiser for the Democratic National Committee in the coming week that several high-profile queer political figures have said they'd refuse to attend. They cited the offensive DOMA brief and the Obama administration's failure to move on repeal of the U.S. military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy as discharges of gay and lesbian service members continue. Baldwin, who's the lead sponsor of the now Obama-endorsed Domestic Partners Benefits and Obligations Act, told MSNBC's Rachel Maddow why she's going to the fundraiser.
Do you feel like you understand people's anger?
Yeah. Oh, not only do I understand the sense of impatience and frustration, as a lesbian, I feel it myself. And I think part of my role in attending the event next week is to convey the sense of urgency and to convey the sense of impatience and frustration that I'm hearing. You know, when you lack basic equality and basic civil rights, we ought to be impatient. That's a mandate if you're an activist. And so I think that this is a very important message to convey and really hopefully to get things moving a little bit more quickly in Congress, as well as bringing things to the president's desk to sign.
The president's words may make things move more quickly in Congress. What do you think would make the president move more quickly?
Well, giving him a bill to sign would be the first order of business.
Coincidence or not, the U.S. government took more baby steps toward equality before the week was over. The Department of Justice informed a gay plaintiff in one of the federal lawsuits against DOMA that he'd be allowed to get a U.S. passport using his married name. He'd been denied that right by the State Department under George W. Bush. Reversing another Bush administration policy, the U.S. Census Bureau announced this week that it would specifically count legally married same-gender couples in the next official government survey scheduled for 2010. And there have been reports that the Justice Department has invited leaders from the major LGBT advocacy groups to a private meeting in the coming week to discuss Obama's gay agenda. It's apparently another move to quell queer discontent with the slow pace of the emblematic change that candidate Obama promised. Some bloggers are still calling this week's developments too little too late. But perhaps history will footnote the name of W. Scott Simpson. Gay blogger Andrew Sullivan identified Simpson as the Bush administration holdover who wrote the controversial Justice Department pro-DOMA brief. In so doing, he may have inadvertently helped advance the cause of LGBT equality. Reporting for This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedvig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Sometimes it's easy to forget that the B in LGBT includes its own rainbow of sexual diversity. This Way Out's Steve Pride sat down with Jesse Rosen, the writer, director, producer, and star of The Art of Being Straight. They talked about Rosen's unusual film and those fuzzy numbers on the Kinsey scale.
When Regent Releasing asked if I'd like to interview the writer, director, producer, and star of a new film about bisexuality, I gently explained there were only 3 guest mics in the studio. Then they explained it was all the same person, and he was the cute shirtless guy on the poster. So,
hello, my name is Jesse Rosen, and I'm the writer, director, and accidental star of The Art of Being Straight. I was not supposed to be in this film at all. We had cast the lead, and he decided to drop out about 3 days before we started shooting. Basically, he wanted to be paid quite a lump sum, and it was either him or the camera, and he chose to let us have the camera, I guess, so I stepped in.
So the rumors that you had to sleep with the writer to get the part
are very, very true, and the director. It was a threesome. Me, myself, and I.
Tell me what the film's about.
The film is about sort of self-discovery, a sexual identity crisis, if you will. It's about a sort of a womanizing 20-something who is seduced by his boss, who is a man, and sort of sent into this world of sexual confusion and trying to figure out whether or not he's gay or straight, thinking that maybe those are his only options. And at the same time tells the story of a girl he knew in college who's since become a lesbian, who's now becoming interested in a man, her neighbor. So it tells these sort of parallel storylines. And, yeah, it's The Art of Being Straight.
I slept with a guy.
You did what?
My boss.
When?
Last week.
So, were you...
Was I what?
Were you given or taken?
Don't ask that.
Come on, it's legit.
No, it's not.
Oh, come on. Top or bottom? Come on, just tell me, please.
Shut up.
You were a bottom, right?
Shut up.
You were a bottom. You were the cutest little bottom. I can picture it.
Where did this come from?
It's based on some personal experience for sure, but it's also based on conversations with friends and people over the years sort of doing research for the film. You know, I had some of the straightest friends I know tell me in confidence, in conversation, you know, I slept with a guy a few days ago, and, you know, it just sort of blew me back, and I realized that this is sort of not a big deal, just something that no one was seemingly talking about, and it's something that I wanted to see on the screen.
The old school thought is that bisexuality is an exact 5 on the Kinsey scale.
Yeah.
I have no preference.
Like an asexual.
You know, a lot of 4s and 6s and 3s and 8s and, you know.
Yeah, and they're not recognized. Where are the 8s? Where are the 2s? This movie is for you. And how do you come to any grand conclusions? Which is not to say that there's anything wrong with coming to any grand conclusions, certainly. Some Seinfeldian ethics there, but you know, I think there hadn't been a movie that I found in the aisles of the video store which I was certainly looking for that represented those numbers.
What sort of feedback are you getting from audiences?
They seem to love it, and people in my generation have written me and come forward and thanked me for making a film that they said was real. And someone recently told me that they felt like the film was a coming-in film as opposed to a coming-out film. And that certainly struck me because I think that's what I was trying to do in terms of a film about self-realization or getting to a point where you can begin to self-realize.
How long did the film take? It was a long journey?
A bit, yeah. 2 years of steadily writing and 2 weeks of shooting, and you know, certainly took a few months to get it off the ground, to find people to help to get it moving, for sure.
What was the hardest part?
Knowing when to say, I'm going to go make this movie now. It's enough writing. It's enough listening to people saying you can't make a movie. That moment of convincing yourself that you are going to take that next step, that you are in pre-production, I think is a challenge. Yeah,
I think you make the film, honestly. I think your performance is really what I took away as like the strongest thing. But in
so being, you're the one.
Yeah, being the writer, the producer, the star, was there ever a moment where you were like, oh, God, I want to just be nice. Maybe I just suck.
Yeah, everyone, like our DP, Aaron Torres, you know, people weren't afraid to give me advice. I remember Ben Atkinson, who was our script supervisor. We had only 3 takes to do the car scene with Maddie, and I played the first 2 takes a little too light, a little too late in John's journey, I guess you could say. And he said, look, man, I never really say anything, but I really think John's not there yet. Maybe you can take it down for this third one. And I gave it a shot, and that is the take for the most part that we used throughout that whole scene. So it was definitely a difficult I forgot your question. A difficult...
Everyone does.
Sorry.
Where do you fall on the Kinsey scale?
I fell off. It really depends. Most of the time, I just like to consider myself in the middle. I tend to date girls, but it's a day-to-day thing, man.
What do you want audiences to take away from this?
That sexuality is not black and white.
This has been a conversation with Jesse Rosen, writer, director, producer, and now movie star. The Art of Being Straight is a Regent release. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
You like boys, but you don't understand. You like girls, well, give yourself a big hand. You go down, but then you come back around. Uh-oh, uh-oh, which way do you go?
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, John Torres, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Free Speech Radio News and reporter Karen Miller.
Paxton performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KRCC, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 2ECR, Eden, New South Wales, Grateful Dread Radio, Baltimore, Maryland, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Say you must go then. I know there is so much to see. You pack up your bags and want to leave. I will not hold you back. I wish you luck on your solo track. I'll wait for you here all alone. And when you've walked enough, then please come home. After the moon, there's nothing that soon I must reach or fear. Girl, I'll just sit here. I love it here below. And I'll keep on digging, keep on loving, connected with you. You don't have to stand by me.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and I'm J.D. Doyle. From time to time on Queer Music Heritage, I like to feature songs that don't really fit into any theme. So this is another one of my Songs I've Been Meaning to Play shows. I'll tell you more about what's in store for you in a few minutes, but I want to get right into the music. I'm starting out with Bettina Schelker. She's from Switzerland, and her first CD in English came out in 2007, and I think it's wonderful. Actually, the CD is half in English and half in German, and I love the flavor that gives to it. It contains two versions of the song I'm opening with, called Solo Trek. So let's finish the song in German.
Es macht mir nichts aus, wenn du sagst, du musst raus, denn ich weiß, es gibt so viel zu sehen. Du packst deine Sachen und wirst gehen. Ich halte dich nicht auf. Wünsch dir Glück für den Solo-Lauf. Ich warte auf dich hier allein. Und wenn du genug gelaufen bist, komm heim. Nach meinem Mond kommt nichts, was sich lohnt zu erreichen. Kein Zeichen, hier setzt sich mir. Ich liebe es hier unten und ich grabe wieder. Liebe und vernetz mich mit dir.
I was so impressed with the album that I couldn't resist calling Bettina for some comments. My first phone interview to Switzerland. Tell me about the new album.
The Honeymoon Is Over is my first record where I sing half of the songs in English. And that gave me the opportunity to go out there all over the world and sing my songs and tell stories. And yeah.
What inspired the song The Honeymoon Is Over?
In Switzerland, 2005, the law passed that gay people can get married. And my girlfriend and I, we were very excited, and I asked her to become my wife, and she said yes. But it took a year till we could do it. Actually, 2 years, I think. because they had to change all the sheets and, you know, all the official forms in the offices. So it took us some time. So we had a lot of time to plan our honeymoon. And so we were so excited, and we went to travel agencies. And here in Switzerland, normally when you go to a honeymoon, you get some kind of special, maybe a discount or a romantic dinner close to the sea and all stuff like that. And nobody wanted to give it to us because we were a woman couple. And so that was very frustrating because the law just passed. It's official, and nobody gives us the honeymoon special. And that made me sad, really sad. So, okay, I have to write a song about it. And that's what The Honeymoon Is Over is about.
Is that the hit of the album?
It is, yeah, it is. I've been touring with a band called Chumbawamba, and I did a lot of shows, and they were very political. And what I've learned from them is that they packed, like, political lyrics into danceable songs. So with this inspiration, musically, and just my a need to say what I was feeling, I wrote The Honeymoon Is Over. And here in Switzerland or Germany, where people not always understand English, they sing along and they dance and they don't even understand what I'm singing about. And I think that's very, very special. Then they buy the CD and then they read what the CD or the song is about. And I think that's also my trick sometimes a little bit to reach people.
Tell me about what awards that song has won.
Yeah, it won the International John Lennon Songwriting Contest in folk category. And that was really an honor for me because, yeah, it's a big contest, and it got me a good reputation for the when we were planning the U.S. tour. It helped really to get shows.
And here's the song that made me fall in love with her album. It's the title track, and it's called The Honeymoon Is Over.
The club. again, again, again and again, 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 again and again. Priorities, teachers, preachers, government speakers, give it a wiggle and I come free.
Again, that was Bettina Shelker. I was telling you about this month's show. I do this about once a year, and this is the eighth show of that series, and it's another multi-part show. As a collector and programmer, I encounter so many songs I want to share with you, and I seem to lack the willpower of only producing 1 hour-long show for radio, when I could do several on the internet version of Queer Music Heritage. So you'll want to check out the site for all the parts, which will include some very fun interviews. This show will jump all over the place musically, with old and new songs, and these next two songs are very new. I want to thank the artist for sending me a demo of his work as he's getting them ready for his debut album. He's from London, and I love his voice and production, and that his songs are very queer. Here are two songs by Matt Fischel.
I'm in love with this guy, but I don't think he feels the same. He's got a girl of his own, and she's practically married to him. And even when he's alone, a night catches his eye, he refuses to notice me. Well, old man, the bastards go say you'd be better off keeping clear. Yet that's not such a feasible option, being male and being queer. I don't know what to do. It's just lust with this guy, but that don't mean it changes things. All I ask is one night to show him what danger means. And there'll be no turning back, he'd fall into bed with me, begging for me to stay. Okay, so I'm dreaming, that's not gonna happen, this isn't fair. I guess I could go camp, but I still dress in drag and he still wouldn't care. I don't know what to do. Forget about this guy. Answers on a postcard, please, 'cause I am lost for a plan. As he goes on rejecting me, I need some damn self-esteem. I hate being needy, I hate feeling out of control. Get what we want and we do. We like when the one thing I want is the one thing that I'm not allowed.
Jamie, you've been breaking my heart, and I want to thank you for your time. And Jamie, you've been making me hard with our little secrets from behind the bike shed. You light the tables and I like all the magazines, but at the end of this day, it wasn't in your eyes I found love for the first time. You were never that good anyway, but I never got less than what I could do best. And now I want to get outside and play. Jamie, you were you from the start, and I'm sick of waiting for you to come by. Jamie, you were never that hard as I flushed the teardrops from out of my eyes. You rolled the papers and I stole all the Vaseline, but at the end of the day, it wasn't in your eyes I found love for the first time. You were never that good anyway, but I nevertheless know what I could do best. And now I want to get outside and play. Oh, Jamie, I have no regrets. Some things are best kept secret. Who knows, maybe someday we could be friends. I can't deny it, you were always a means to an end. Oh, Jamie, Jamie, what have we done? Oh, Jamie, we had so much fun. Jamie, now I wanna be free, free from the clutches that you've held on me. And Jamie, I'm unlocking the door as I pull the chain down on what's gone before us. I'm sick of kneeling and I'm tired of always standing around. You never blew me away. It wasn't in your eyes I found love for the first time. Cause you were never that good anyway. But I nevertheless know what I could do best. And now I wanna get out, oh, I wanna get out. So I don't let you go back inside and play.
You could only find Matt Fischel on MySpace, and the first of those two songs was called How Do You Get With the Guy? The second song has the odd title of Armitage Shanks, Jamie. Americans probably won't know that Armitage Shanks was a British manufacturer of bathroom fixtures. I'm staying in England for one more song, and I've loved this one for many years. It's from the 1984 musical Chess, and in that show, it was a duet between Elaine Page and Barbara Dixon, both divas in the UK. And in the song, looking back on the man they reluctantly shared. The song is called I Know Him So Well, which was a number one hit in Britain. Well, finally, there's a male version of this song. It's on John Barrowman's latest album called Music, Music, Music. I also love him as the very sexy, openly gay character on the BBC America show Torchwood. Anyway, on his CD, he does a duet on the song with openly gay British music theater actor Daniel Boys.
Nothing is so good, it lasts eternally. Perfect situations must go wrong, but this has never yet prevented me wanting far too much for far too long. Looking back, I could have played it differently. One of you more can tell, but it took time to understand the man. Now at least I know I'd know him well. Wasn't it good?
Oh, so good.
Wasn't he fine?
Oh, so fine.
Isn't it madness? He can't be mine. But in the end, lend me more security. I know him so well. No one in your life is with you constantly. No one is completely on your side. And though I moved my world to be with him, still the gap between us is too wide. Looking back, I could have played it differently.
John Barrowman and Daniel Boys from John's 2008 album.
I'm a type, and by me that's really great. I am proud that my
Ah, yes, those leaping lesbians who enjoy being a dyke, who call themselves Chicago's Lesbian Feminist Chorus. And in 2005, they put out a 2-CD set called 25 Years, capturing performances from their long history.
I'm Adam Lambert, I'm 26 years old, and I'm from Hollywood, California. I decided to come out and audition for American Idol now after watching it the past 8 years and going like, oh, I want to do that. Mama just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life has just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away.
Okay. You know what? I think you're a really good singer.
Yes, Adam Lambert certainly proved he was a really good singer. And I am most disappointed he wasn't chosen as American Idol. But he'll be just fine. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. And this is another one of my shows where I had too much great material for just 1 hour. So you can find much more on my site. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night, Sunday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. I want to take a break to pay a little tribute to Bea Arthur, who died in April. She was not lesbian, but was very popular with our community. And while I do not generally feature straight artists, I figured out a way to include her. In 1980, she hosted a television show, and in addition to Rock Hudson, one of the guests was Madam, as in Waylon Flowers and Madam. Younger folks in the audience may want to go to YouTube to find clips of the puppet who was Madam, a very outrageous and sassy old broad. Waylon Flowers was definitely gay and created Madam in the mid-60s, and they were frequent guests on TV shows in the 70s and 80s until Flowers' death in 1988. In this clip, Bea Arthur and Madam spar for a little and then sing, "A Good Man Is Hard to Find."
Well, Madam, after all these years, here we are finally working together. I can't tell you how excited I am.
Oh, Bea, darling, you must try.
Oh, I mean it, I really do. And I must say, I have never seen you looking better.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I've always said, beauty is only skin deep, but ugly is all the way to the bone.
And speaking of all the way, Madam, I just can't take my eyes off that diamond choker. It is stunning.
You
stunning.
Know, thank you. I almost didn't wear it.
Oh?
I didn't want to overdress.
You? Overdress?
Well, I had this picture of you coming out in one of those famous ensembles you made famous. You know, the dress over the pantsuit.
Of course, not everyone can wear clothes the way you do.
Well, that's true.
And the rest of us wouldn't have the nerve.
Cute. Real cute, Bea.
Now what's the matter?
Come on, Bea. Enough stalling around. Where is he? Where have you got him stashed?
Who?
You know who. Get it out here, Hudson! I want a piece of that rock.
Are you still obsessed with sex?
Obsessed with sex? I have very little to say about sex. Yes, when, and where. Hey, Rocky baby! Oh, Rock, come to Mama!
Madam, I hate to sound catty. Madam, isn't there a slight age problem with you and Rock?
Well, you get off my back, Bea. You only go around this world once. You gotta grab all the gusto you can.
You're not going to grab Rock Hudson's gusto on my show.
All right, but you're not fooling me for 1 minute. You just want him for yourself.
Madam, don't be ridiculous. Rock Hudson is a friend. He's a very dear, kind, thoughtful person. He's a perfect gentleman who would never, ever take advantage of a woman.
Never?
Ever.
To hell with him. Let's see. A good man is hard to find. You always get the other kind.
Slip in a little country with another artist I discovered on MySpace. He doesn't have a CD yet, but I would definitely look forward to one. Here's Randall Walker and The Guy Just Drives Me Crazy.
There's something about the way he walks in a room makes me weak in my knees. Something about the way he smiles at me and my heart skips a beat. Something about the way he holds my hand and everything gets hazy. There's just something about the way he looks at me. Something I can feel but I just can't see. And what it all comes down to is the guy just drives me crazy. He just drives me crazy. Out of my mind like a jukebox in July. He's got me walking on air and I swear there's a fair chance that I could fly. He just drives me crazy. And I got a feeling we're dealing with love. Take it slow. He drives me crazy. And I wonder, does he know? His touch that moves me so much I just tremble inside. Something about the way he greets me sweetly with arms open wide. Something about the way he calls my name and I wilt like a daisy. There's just something about the way he looked last night. Something in the way that he held me tight. And what it all comes down to is the guy just drives me crazy. He just drives me crazy. Out of my mind like a jukebox in July. He's got me walking on air and I swear there's a fair chance that I could fly. He just drives me crazy. And I got a feeling we're dealing with love. Take it slow. He drives me crazy. And I wonder, does he know? I can't sleep at night. He consumes my dreams. I got no appetite. Something inside me screams. He just drives me crazy. Out of my mind like a jukebox in July. He's got me walking on air and I swear there's a fair chance that I could fly. He just drives me crazy. And I got a feeling we're dealing with love. Take it slow. He drives me crazy. And I wonder, does he know? He just drives me crazy. And I wonder, does he know?
Up in the country where the wild flowers bloom. His hair is gold as sunshine. His smile lit up the room. At church on Sunday morning, he'd raise his voice up loud. And all he ever wanted was to make his daddy proud. football, track, and basketball. He'd try with all his might. Whenever there was trouble, he'd never want to fight. Oh, Lord, please make me stronger. Each night in bed he'd pray. But he couldn't hold the tears inside when he heard his daddy say, no son of mine is gonna be a sissy. No son of mine is gonna be a girl. That ain't the way I raised you, so don't you cry and whine. 'Cause if you do, I'm telling you, you ain't no son of mine. I dated lots of pretty girls, but it never did feel right. They weren't who he was thinking of as he lay in bed at night. He tried so hard to fight it. He tried so hard to pray. But his dreams of laying in a young man's arms would never go away. Well, his daddy flew into a rage when he heard his boy was queer. He cracked his ribs and blacked his eyes, then he bloodied up his ears. Mama said, you gotta go, for God's sake, get away. He climbed aboard that Greyhound bus, he could hear his daddy say, no son of mine is gonna be a sissy. No son of mine is gonna be a girl. That ain't the way I raised you, so don't you cry and whine. You might as well go straight to hell, 'cause you ain't no son of mine. He walked the great big city till the holes wore through his shoes. He sold himself just to survive, and it left him feeling used. Drugs, they helped him to forget, and the liquor eased his pain. Each time that he remembered that he'd never see home again. As he huddled in an alley one bitter Christmas Eve, he said, where did you go, Lord, and why did I believe? He said, I must deserve this, or I would not be here. Then a voice so calm and gentle whispered in his ear, no son of mine will ever be forsaken. No son of mine will ever be alone. You're perfect how I made you. There's no mountain you can't climb. As long as you remember that you're a son of mine. Oh, no son of mine will ever be forsaken. No son of mine will ever be alone. You're perfect how I made you. There's no mountain you can't climb. As long as you remember, you're a son of mine. As long as you remember that you're a son of mine.
Following Randall Walker was Matt Albert, with a side of him you're not likely used to. But Matt can sing many kinds of music. For years, he was in the Grammy-winning group Chanticleer, and early in this decade, he dabbled with country music a little. That song is called No Son of Mine and can be found only on a CD called Committed to My Heart, the Music of Richard Link from 2005, where Link, who is a writer rather than a vocalist, shares a number of his compositions as sung by others. These days, Matt Albert is getting a lot of exposure with his new album, Hide Nothing, and the beautiful video of his song, End of the World. I asked him to tell us about it.
End of the World is a song we just made a music video for. And it's one of the first songs I wrote. And I was going through a kind of a tough breakup. And I was hoping to hold on to the guy.
The video is gorgeous. What inspired that?
Thank you. My friend Robin Scoville directed the video. We were brainstorming about what story might be best told with this song. And we stumbled into my barbershop, which is in my neighborhood. And we met Jerry. And we twisted his arm. And he agreed to let us shoot. And then also to let him star in the video. So it's really the story is not about the sort of fantasy that might happen when you're down on your luck and trying to regain the hope of falling in love.
I don't want to ride this roller coaster. Think I want to get off, but they buckled me down like it's the end of the world. If you don't want to have this conversation, then you better get out, cause we're climbing to our death. At least that's what they want you to think. Just in case we jump the track, I have a confession to make. Something like a scream out quite so loudly when we screech to a halt. I'm just never prepared for the end of the ride. Maybe we should get on something simpler, like a giant balloon. I've got two tickets left, and so do you. Instead of giving them away,
this is Matt Albert, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
Again, you'll definitely want to visit Matt Albert's website to see the video for End of the World. Hear that? That's what I use for a ringtone. It's been 25 years since Jimmy Somerville and Bronski Beat released their iconic anthem, Small Town Boy. On May 19th, Jimmy released his first album in 5 years, and this one is quite different for him. It's, for him, very stripped down. It's not a dance CD, and it's more lyrically gay. And, to my dismay, it's a digital-only release. I guess I'm old school. I like a CD I can hold in my hand and read the liner notes. In fact, this is the first complete CD I've ever purchased from iTunes, so Jimmy should be complimented. I quite like the CD, and from it is his version of the old Deep Purple song, Hush, this time done with male pronouns.
He looks so fine. He's the best I ever had. When he shows me, it feels so bad. He's got a love like quicksand. All it took was a touch of his hand. Blew my mind, it went so deep. I can't eat and I can't sleep. Ooh, tell the truth now. Hush, hush, I thought I heard him call my name. Hush, hush, he broke my heart, I love him just the same. Hush, hush, I thought I heard him call my name. Hush, hush, he broke my heart, I love him just the same.
Jimmy Somerville and Hush from his new album called Suddenly Last Summer. Up next is a new song by Josh Duffy with a little help from hip-hop artist Milaj Lavon. The song is called Truth.
People always tell me what I should do with my life, with my life. Always trying to tell me what's wrong and never tell me what's right. This depression's bringing on the depression, and that's not how I want to be. But in the back of my mind, I know I'll be fine. Don't need nobody to influence me. Yeah. I've tried to hide this feeling inside me, taking my time to tell ya. Well, I've been searching for someone to help me through this. But now the time of truth is coming out. Deep inside I am who I am. I know I gotta be made. I have taken all I can take. Let me breathe. Tired of running and all of this hiding. It's time that I just break free. Well, maybe you'll understand exactly who I am.
Thanks for joining me on my latest Songs I've Been Meaning to Play show. I'm down to the last song, and of course, I've got to commemorate the 40th anniversary of Stonewall. Before I get to that song, I want to mention that there's much more to hear of this show on my site, over 2 hours more, because I've saved up some terrific music and more interviews to share with you. Of course, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. My very first show was in January of 2000, and I closed it with a song put together by John Gilbert Levitt called Pride. It's kind of a history song, and we tend to forget too much of our history, so I'm glad that he's updated it and created a video to go with it, so you can see many, many historic photos of our journey. Here's John Gilbert Levitt with additional vocals by Kevin Hannon and Freddie Freeman and Pride 2009.
Suit up, hats and button shoes, erotic contestant, night cruise, Berlin Gay Society in 1903. Sigmund Freud's Vienna's life identifies the homotype, the intermediate sex, and heterodoxy. The gay wave moves across the sea, hello, them is liberty. Betty Boop is hot and hooches out in the cold. Greenwich Village, Bloomsbury, gays in high society, Harlem Night, Chicago Fire, Cleo Golden Globe.
Power is pride. It's time to celebrate all the colors. Listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
We're supposed to wear costumes to the KPFT auction. It's a wear that funky costume kind of thing. Fabulous prizes will be awarded to the most awesome, weird, provocative, strange, ecstatic, unemployed, disastrous moment collage of creativity ever put on the KPFT listener body. If decorating your body isn't enough, you could buy a table and decorate it too. Place elephants, giraffes, gorillas, monkeys, lions, cats, cardboard cutouts, posers, fake pirates, runaway radios, ex-spouses, sod, trees, airplanes, boats, trains, surgeons, giant squids, and useless junk on your table. Eat around it, drink around it, share what it means with you. It may be therapeutic, but probably not. More likely just embarrassing. But if you take the grand prize home, who cares? Saturday evening, July 18th, KPFTauction.org. Be there. KPFT, kicking intolerant butt for over 30 years.
You're listening to KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM.
KPFT is currently accepting nominations for delegates to the local station board. The local station board is composed of listeners, volunteers, and staff, elected to bring diverse voices from our region into the dialogue between community and the station, and to assist with fundraising, community outreach, program support, and general governance. The local station board, quite simply, shapes the future of KPFT. There are three ways to qualify to vote and run. Contribute at least $25 to one of the stations, complete 30 or more verified hours, or obtain a special waiver from the local station board. Complete voting, nomination, and deadline information is at kpft.org. Or you can contact our local election supervisor, Ann Shaw, at election@kpft.org or 713-526-4000, extension 303. We're looking for board delegates who have fresh perspectives, creative energy, and a dedication to bring together all aspects of the community that's at the heart of KPFT's mission. We hope you'll join us. KPFT Houston.
We're supposed to wear costumes to the KP.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.